Welcome to Soft Human Voice. This is a podcast dedicated to helping you remember who you truly are. And I want you to know that you are not alone. You are loved. You are safe. You are intuitive. You are connected to guidance. And all of this is happening, and we just tend to forget. I think that is the major challenge of being in a body, is that we forget all of these things, that we are just here as spirit beings having this interesting experience. And in the process, we have a lot of distractions, and we can forget that we are not alone. We can forget all these things. And I'm kind of leading into a topic with my guest today, who is Caradwyn Fallingstar, who will help us to remember. And she does this in an interesting way through connecting across timelines. So it'll be a lot of fun. I've really been looking forward to talking with Caradwyn. We've known each other for many years. A lot of years have gone by since we've connected. So we're going to dive into that in a minute. But first, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Jessica Shefford. I am an author, healer, an artist. I am many things, so many things. It's hard to kind of define myself. But I have about 5 books on the market now, which is fun. My last one was The Intuitive Energy Divination Deck. And it's a kind of oracle deck designed to help you connect to your true self and trust your inner guidance and trust your intuition. And so I started this podcast because I just love talking about these topics. Really excited to have a fellow author with me, a writer who just does beautiful work in addition to her healing teaching. And I'd like to read to you a little bit of Caradwyn's bio, just to introduce Caradwyn Fallingstar. And this is Caradwyn. You can say, hello, Caradwyn. There she is, coming from, are you still in San Geronimo, California?
I'm still in San Geronimo in California.
Yeah, I had a feeling. Coming to you live from, or recorded from San Geronimo, and I'm in Honolulu, so it's fun to do this. So Caradwyn, to introduce Caradwyn Fallingstar, is a pioneering priestess in the feminist spirituality movement. She helped ignite in the 1970s and has taught classes in shamanism and personal transformation for over 40 years. And I think this was her first past life book, was called The Heart of the Fire, which is my first exposure to her writing. It was a historical novel about witchcraft set in the 16th century Scotland. And she says it sold over 20,000 copies in 2 printings, which is pretty impressive. And then she went on to publish some more past life novels, including a series we're going to talk about today, which is her White as Bone, Red as Blood series. There's 2 of those. And then, of course, there's Rocket in My Pocket, which is a charming little book of vignettes, like little stories that are a lot of fun. And then Broth from the Cauldron, which has a lot of wisdom in it. Additionally to her books, Caradwyn has published hundreds of articles, poems, and short stories in a variety of periodicals. She's been interviewed by various media channels, including CNN, Oxygen Channel, Discovery Channel. I read something about Oprah Channel. She also has 2 bachelor degrees from Beloit College and master's degree from UCLA. And she offers a wide variety of classes, including a year-long apprenticeship program. And she works as a professional psychic, offering readings and hypnotherapy. So, Caradwyn, you are very diverse as well.
It's all actually kind of the same stuff in just different presentations. You know?
Right. It was fun because I was reading your wiki page to kind of get familiar with you again. And on your wiki page, it was talking, just noticed you'd been cited in by a lot of scholars and like in feminist studies or just looking at your unique style of writing, which I'm going to get into in a second. So I was like, oh, wow, she's like in academic circles too. You know, Caradwyn's a big deal. So I don't know. I just met Caradwyn when I was living in Marin County. I was good friends with somebody whose husband was in your apprenticeship program. And at the time, I was new in my marriage to John. and dealing with being a stepmother to three girls and coming into some issues. One of my friends suggested, well, maybe you should check out Kara Dwin and have a past life regression with her. And so I did. I had a regression with you. And I remember we both had, I had told you, I don't know if I can do this because I'd never been regressed before. And because my father was a hypnotherapist in my youth and my father and I had not, you know, so I had kind of blocks up, right? And I was like, I didn't know. And sure enough, like it was like almost instant. And I remember Kara Dwin, as tears were streaming down my face, you said to me, well, I guess we're not making this up. And I was so, just, I'll never forget you saying that. So that's our brief connection of how you and I met. And so I wanted to remind you of that too, because it's been a long
time. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to just start talking about, before we even get into that other healing work, just Kara Dwin sent me her White as Bone, Red as Blood, book number 2, The Storm God. I had read The Fox Sorceress, book number 1, and fell in love with it. Just so beautiful. I have to say, just the clan culture that you, I mean, give a little bit away, that you were a part of at that time, was just intellectual, artful, very civilized, very poetry oriented. So this takes place in specific time in Japan. So can you just talk?
12th century Japan. Yeah, it's kind of height of Japanese culture and, you know, beautiful writing, beautiful paintings. It was a very sophisticated time and place. And what I'm writing about is that shift between this period of time in which a man was measured by how beautifully he wrote morning after letter to the lady he had spent the night with the night before, and how he matched the sleeves of his garments and blended his own perfumes. That was the measure of a man. And then once the warfare started, a man was measured by at what distance could he knock another man off his horse with his bow and arrow, and could he cut one in half with his single sword, with a blow of his sword. So it's one of those big dramatic cultural shifts, and those periods of history very much intrigue me, especially when we're going from a more functional culture into a less functional culture. And how does that happen? How do we have those drops, those descents? We're in one right now, so it's pretty relevant, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as I was reading it and feeling like that age of enlightenment almost shifts from that enlightened way of being to, by the end, not to get too much away, but the second installment of your novel, the shift was so dramatic, it felt brutal.
And over such a short period of time.
How long was that period of time that shift occurred?
Well, really, it's about a 10-year, 20-year period, maybe. At least, maybe there's probably things leading up before that. No doubt there were. But in terms of what I, as being someone who was in that time, I didn't become aware of the shift until very close to when it was happening. Of course, it was a somewhat sheltered upper class woman. So no doubt I was missing some of the signals, which indeed would have been probably kept from me actively. Right. But it seemed very abrupt to those of us who were there at the time.
It felt abrupt to me reading it. I could feel that coming through. And so we should dive right in to the very, very intriguing piece of these novels, the fact that Kara Dwin lived these experiences. And so why don't you tell us, first of all, the name of, you actually have a genre for this type of historical novel.
I call it posthumous autobiography, which, as far as I know, is a term that I invented. Well, it's me remembering, you know, what I have experienced in other lifetimes and then writing about it. And I've had that ability to go in and out of other lifetimes for a long time. Most children have past life memories, and I did too. When I was, my first that I remember was about the lifetime that I wrote about in 16th century Scotland, which I believe was the last life I had before this one. I took a substantial break in between lifetimes. So when I was about 3 and a half, I remember saying to my parents, I'm so glad we're rich now. And they're like, oh, honey, we're not rich. I said, yes, we are. I said, look, we have rug on the floor instead of dirt. We eat meat every day. And then I went and turned on the hot water in the tub. I said, look, hot water whenever we want it. We're rich. And my parents were like, who is this kid? I mean, we didn't have a television. I couldn't read. So where am I? But I remember having to walk a long way and get water up out from a hole in the ground. We had to pull it up with a bucket. And I didn't remember having died in between. I didn't know it was a different life. It was the same life. So I thought it was just all the same, a continuation. So I didn't have any memories of death, that I was somewhere different. So that was very confusing to me, that they kept saying, no, that never happened. And I was like, I'm sure it did.
Were they open to going with it at a certain point, or were you?
They really just wanted me to shut up and be a little more normal. They're agnostic scientific types, for which I'm grateful. I'm grateful. I've been raised Catholic or something. I probably would have been beaten to death in an exorcism or something. So I'm very, very grateful that I grew up without that. But they didn't have any container in which to cope with it.
I didn't have that
make any sense. They wanted me to have a logical, rational mind, not to keep coming in and talking about what the birds were talking about outside, things like that. My mother, later in life, she said, you know, you were always like this. She says, you would be coming in telling us what the birds were talking about. You'd be predicting what kind of sex babies all my friends are going to have. She says, you were always like this. Now I believe it's past life, because it's the only explanation for how you could have been the way you were. And I said, you're so right, Mom. It's not your fault. She just wanted to make sure it was not her fault. But as time went on, later on, she would always consult me before any decision and having me do a tarot reading for her, because she knew by then. Mm-hmm. She knew I was psychic. She knew. But she did come to that. And another time, one of her cousins did a genealogy, which went back, took our family back to the 1100s, to a guy named Michael the Wizard, who apparently had a bad habit of drawing down lightning on the castles of his enemies. And she said, look, there it is, the bad genes. I said, exactly. It's the bad genes. There's nothing you could have done about it.
Right. So, really, you could have taught anybody this, Mom. Wow. Oh, my goodness. And I mean, knowing you now through your work, I can tell it's just a different way of regarding a piece of literature, or several now that I've read. Caradwyn is such an amazing writer. And oh, wait, you were a poet in that lifetime in Japan. So this was a part of who you were. And so connecting those lines, essentially remembering beyond time, can help you connect with who you are now, of course, which is what I experienced from you in a separate regression, which we can talk about more, but in a second. But this idea of these qualities that are so well honed in you, I just kept wanting to revisit those over and over again. And so glad I got to in the second book, because the first one I was like, oh, this is over. And white is bone, red is blood. And beautiful cover, by the way. This is the second one.
My niece designed the cover. She's an artist.
Yeah. Every time I had this out, people will comment on how beautiful it is. So
oh, nice.
I want you to know that. But it really communicates what's within. But I was just fascinated by your past life as,
Seiko.
Like the watch.
So,
yeah. So can you tell us a little bit just about who you were as Seiko?
Oh, I was born as an upper class young woman. Mother was kind of probably high up in the, they had money. They were in the circle, the emperor and empress's circle. And then my mother was a priestess of Inari, who was a deity in the Japanese pantheon, his deity of magic. She's harvest. She's the abundance. She's the love that transcends death. She's many, many things. She's the fox,
kind of sorceress, the
transformation, sorcery.
Yeah.
She's definitely an aspect of the divine feminine. And so my brother was an Inari priestess. And so that was my start in life. And then a series of tragedies wound me up in the court, where I ended up being close friends with the young empress, who I had known since she was a child. I was in that situation and of tending to her needs and the needs of the women's court. The women would have a very separate court from the men at that point in time. So we had a kind of a different culture that was much more about cultured things and We weren't sitting around talking about war or strategy or this or that.
Poetry, moonlight poetry sessions, or you do helping the young women and young men find each other through words, through poetry, and doing these tutoring sessions, which are like essentially how to write love notes. Yeah.
It's just right. Love notes, sexual tutoring, teaching the young women what to expect, what to do, so that they would not go into, it was a very different culture. It wasn't hostile to sexuality at any point. You know, it's very different from Western culture that there's not that fear and hostility around sexuality.
I mean, all of those don't even do it justice because there is such tremendous sensuality, physicality, connection to nature side by side with what you're experiencing as the brutality of civilization over the course of these two novels, that I found it almost like, I don't know if I'm going to like the second one because I knew it was coming. But then the way that you had us embody, you know, your physical experience through your connection to beauty, to pleasure, to sensuality, to touch, to, you know, and how you went through all of these losses of people you loved, so visceral and yet so beautiful by both what you bring to it in your writing and what you communicated experiencing. I found myself retelling this pieces of the story to John, and he goes, every time you tell me this, I feel like it should be one of those like Thornbird sagas on TV.
Like, you know, one of those. Well, I would be
Romeo.
It would work well. I mean, they just had the, you know, oh gosh, what's the Japanese series that just came out? Shogun. They just had Shogun, which, so yes, whoever did Shogun should absolutely be doing my novels too.
So if you're listening, Angels, I would love time this in Hollywood, and it would be time. Fun. Right. Would you like that, Kierman?
I would like it. I've actually got someone shopping The Heart of the Fire right now in Hollywood. So we'll see if anyone goes for that or not. But there's, you know, I think it's, they're both, I think, more timely now. You know, I've always been a little ahead of my time, which is, you know, kind of a drag, to tell you the truth. But it's, you know, I think the culture is starting to catch up with me a little bit here. So with any luck, maybe something will come about.
Yeah.
Maybe something will emerge out of that to bring it to a bigger audience. Yeah, that would be great.
Deserves it. Absolutely. 100% deserves it. 1000%. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the posthumous biography process before we talk about past life stuff that people might be able to relate to through their own experiences and regressions. But so the posthumous biography, when you started remembering as a small child, but then there was a certain point in time where you decided obviously to write this down and kind of that you had enough to make a saga. And the startling amount of detail, I'm just wondering, as a writer, how much of that is inference and like research at the library, and how much of it was feeling like...
How I write the books is I put myself into a trance and hypnotic state. And then I talk into the tape recorder everything that I'm experiencing as I'm experiencing it. So then when I come back, I transcribe the tape. And it has lots of detail. I'm there. I'm talking it as I'm experiencing a real piece. I describe the tape, and then I edit it from there. And then I also go and research to see, does this back, like especially the Japanese ones, they don't teach you any Japanese history in this country at all. I had no education in Japanese history, knew nothing about it. I was able to locate the time period by the artwork. So that's how I located where I was in time, was by
would see the art.
Right. I would see things, go to some book. And this isn't the day where you had to go to the library. It was a lot of work. I'd be going through Japanese art books. You know, this, I don't remember anything like that. We must be in the 12th century or thereabouts. So I was like, all right. I started researching. Okay, well, I'm remembering this battle here. Did that actually happen? And I look it up and I'm like, oh shit, it really happened. And I'd get all nervous and start walking around shaking. And I'd sit back down and go, oh God, this is real. Okay. I know it's real, but it's still kind of intense when it's exactly right. And there's no way you could have possibly heard about this at any other point in this lifetime, because I just didn't. I wasn't a history major. I never had studied it.
Yeah.
I did not have that information. in any logical scholarly way.
Yeah.
So there's always kind of gives me the, I do still get the shivers.
Yeah.
It's confirmed that, oh, yep, that's how it happened. Then I'm like, oh, okay. All right, stay calm. This is fine. So yeah, it's an interesting
process. When you're going back to the trance and remembering, are you able to stay calm? Or are you, because I have to say that this lifetime is intense.
Oh, I get very emotional, and then I cry, and I'm crying on the tape, and when I'm recording it, there I am crying and whatever I'm experiencing at the time. It is a profound experience to go through, just like writing. I've written two memoirs about this life, and again, you're going back in time to your childhood. Sometimes there's a lot of very emotional content, and you just have to deal with that, those emotional feelings. I've done a ton of I do past life regressions in my hypnotherapy practice, but I've also done a whole lot of work with people working with their childhood issues. They're just going back to their childhood.
Yeah.
And that can be very, very emotional, depending on what's going on.
I love at one of my platforms, I feel like it's just honoring the truth of emotion, and just the feelings are always honest, right? And even if you're going through a false belief and getting to the truth of that, it's like... It's a direct line through, like a through line to who you are, right? And so just hearing, I guess, that you go through these feelings, that you're re-experiencing them, and it's kind of a part of your process, is reassuring to me, because sometimes I think that people don't want to feel, they don't want to relive, or we have such cultural hang-ups about feelings and emotions generally. And I've found that, like, I wouldn't be who I am if I had not allowed myself to feel the depths and the heights. And I was really feeling right. That in this.
Yep. And it takes a lot of courage. That's why I sometimes people say, well, how do you know if someone needs therapy? And I'm like, did you grow up in this culture? Yes, you need therapy. No doubt about it. No need to ask. You grew up in crazy town. You need some therapy. Even if you had one of the better families, if you grew up here, you need some help. So get some help. And
there's no shame in that. And there's gobs of cultural crap about that too, about like having it together and the whole whatever. We could talk about that mythic things about American being independent and masculine and patriarchal, which is another thing I loved about your, this felt like it was a shift from matriarchy. Am I wrong in that? Like, was it a matriarchal period, your clan, or more matriarchal oriented, and then it went to patriarchal pretty quickly?
It wasn't still matriarchal. Certainly males had been running things for a while.
Yeah.
But not all of the values had shifted out. There was still a lot of feminine value in, say, the arts, in, say, lovemaking as an art. There were many, as in nature worship, as the way people were worshiping. So it was maybe a little less of a sharp division between the more matristic and the patristic ways of of culturally looking at things. In Japan, I think maybe they contained more of the feminine within their process as they moved into patriarchy. And then yes, this was a more abrupt drop into a very militaristic society.
Sure.
So even though men had been kind of running things before, they weren't running them with as much, as violent an approach as what happened later on.
So Seiko, you called into these really important discussions. There's so many characters that I was just going with it, and I didn't read that you had it. And so for future reference for people at the end of the book, there is principal characters, and I didn't find that.
Yes, sir. They're all back there. Because it's hard for people who are... Well, it's very hard for English speakers to keep up with all the different Japanese names, because they're foreign sounding, and it's hard for people to keep track. So that's why, yes, they're all listed at the back with who's who, and so you can go...
So wait, I'm not going to be able to tell you names, Caredwin, when I'm recounting this piece of writing that you did, but there was one point when your clan was like kind of cast out, and you are in this temporary makeshift places that you have to be with whatever of the court is left, and you get awakened in the middle of the night and called into a kind of meeting of head counsel to be asked your opinion on whether they should trust a letter from somebody claiming to be an ally inviting you back to your home. And that was like around page 300 or so. And this is kind of the role that Carradine played in this lifetime of being this kind of connected, wise counsel to, I don't know, the elders beyond. But they would call her into these very high level discussions and trust what she said. So they handed her the paper saying, oh, you know, I'll give you everything you want. Just come home. And you, as Seiko looked at it, and you saw the word lies swimming on it. And then you had also, just walking into this meeting, had gotten a kind of like intuition, a knowing that whatever this was, it wasn't legit. And then you had had another affirmation. You received some symbols of, if you were to go back, you saw images of fishnets and fishermen gathering up all the fishes. So you had three ways of receiving. And I'm bringing this up because intuition, receiving information, I do it similarly. So, and I've learned.
So it's familiar too.
It's very familiar to me. I've had the word swimming on the paper. And I just want to say that, because I like demystifying this for listeners and people who study with me, is it feels very ordinary. And when we talk about it and the way words coming out of my mouth, I wish I could also say, this is so comfortable and ordinary that even Carradine, you were like, huh, like, man, you know, like we, as intuitives and psychics, it's just like, huh, really? Like, it's almost like that subtle nudge, or I don't know how you would describe it, but sometimes that's why we get validation in several different ways for important things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, we're all naturally psychic, some more than others, just like some people are better at math than others, right? It's not a supernatural quality. It's a natural quality. It's just that it's been made frightening in our culture because we persecuted people who had a lot of it, who we called witches. And because, you know, we slaughtered large numbers of mostly women, that has led people to be afraid of this very natural process of just getting intuitive hits and intuitive information.
Just being connected.
But yeah, people generally have it.
Oh, we don't want you to be connected. Nope, don't be connected to yourself. Nope. Don't listen.
Of course not. If you want to dominate people and you want to control people, then you need to cut them apart from their power. You know, so that's the process that patriarchy does, is to try and cut people, separate them out from their power. Like, you notice how women have the big hips and are the child bearers. Our power is in our sexuality. And that's where they try and cut us apart, is from our sexual power. Mm. I think about men with the big shoulders and the chest. Their power is in their heart. Mm. They're heart-centered by nature. Mm-hmm. And our culture tries to cut them apart from their love and from their connection to their heart. So it's very cued to try to do everything it can. Mm-hmm. She does everything it can to make you a slave. And then it's up to you to decide, say, maybe I don't want to do that. Maybe I would like to, you know, have more freedom and have more of my natural capacities, and that they are natural capacities, and it doesn't make you weird or a freak. It's funny how people, though, they get very attached to, I remember having a man kind of saying, well, I'm different from everyone else. I have these powers. And I'll be like, oh, okay, tell me about it. You tell me, oh, no, that's all perfectly natural. That's just your natural psychic abilities. And people generally have it. No, he says, no, what I have is unique. No one else has it. I'm like, oh, God. And he was very attached to seeing himself as this loner who had abilities no one else had.
Is he from Northern California? I am.
Sorry, the man from Marin? Yes, I believe it was the man from Marin.
Yes. I'm so special.
The man from Marin. Yes, the classic man from Marin. Yes. So people sometimes get attached to, in a strange way, to being unique. But really, you'll actually open up to more power if you make it natural. And just, this is, of course I have this. These things happen. Yeah. Everyone does, some more, some less. And just like any other capacity. And
I find it's more common to go in the other direction, where people like would be listening to you and be going, oh my God, she's so special. She says, and I don't have, because scarcity and poverty is so like part of the control system. So it's like, you have all the special powers and I can't possibly have that. And I notice anytime I'm in that any time of scarcity, I cut myself off from what I'm able to do.
Yeah, that's a good observation too. Yeah. So sometimes it's also people don't want to take responsibility to have that much power. There's that fear, and people are afraid they'll misuse their power. And that's a reasonable thing to worry about. You do want to think about it and make some very conscious decisions about it. I'm seeing a really big wave now of people really trying to make money off women's spirituality. They're going to make this fortune, and they're going to do this and do that. And you see, you get people that I've never heard of doing these podcasts and stuff where there'll be like six of them. And I'm not saying, I mean, I'm glad the people I've never heard of are doing stuff. Of course, the young generation's coming up. I want that to happen. I've been working for it my whole life. More power to that. Keep going. But what I'm saying is that they're doing it in a very, how many thousand followers do you have? And if you have enough thousand followers, you can be on this podcast. And if not, not. Because we're exchanging lists. And it just gets to be very commercial and very, and I'm like, well, I don't know what you're up to, but I'm here to change the world, you know. I'm here to make a better world. And my priority is that. So of course I'm not going to use my abilities to manipulate people. Right. That's not changing the world in the healthy direction that I want it to go. So by all means, think carefully. How do you want to use your power? It is easy to misuse it if you aren't conscious. And if you just, and some part of you thinks, oh, I'm entitled. Mm-hmm. I had someone get together with a woman guru that she was all enthusiastic about. Mm-hmm. And I felt a little, no. And she says, oh, come and listen to one of her meditations. So I went to the meditation and afterwards went up and introduced myself. And the woman embraced, so she immediately corded me all the way up. Boom, boom, boom. I felt it on all my chakras. And I was like, ooh, oh, I don't think so. And of course, I went home and just uncorded myself and thought, oh, yeah, if somebody didn't know what she was doing, that would be a pretty effective way of grabbing onto them. I told my friend about it, and she asked the teacher about it. I expected the teacher to deny it, but she said, when you come into the presence of an enlightened one, you give permission for that. And I was like, oh, no, I was not given permission for that at all. So unfortunately, you see people misuse it, and it's up to you. Be careful. Decide for yourself. What do you want out of life? Do you want to make a better world? To try and grab some money? Do you want to feel clever because you can manipulate other people? It's easy to manipulate other people. Donald Trump can do it. Is this really where you want to go?
It's a really weird time for healers, in a sense, because I'm seeing what you're seeing to this kind of new generation. They're kind of making their own career online. And I think that comes with that need to pay the bills, but there's also there's this kind of feelings of entitlement that come through, and the popularity thing that just the followers that actually trickled into every business that I look at now has that mindset. If you're not popular enough, you know, and it's just shocking. So I think personally, and then we can move on to more important things. But personally, I feel like this is gonna have to shift and fall apart. This whole internet, social media specifically, because there are people out there where I feel your heart. I'm sitting here in my heart. I'm really concerned about integrity. I'm concerned about your integrity and my integrity in what we're doing. That's kind of the oath for me of being a healer, do no harm, right? Like, and that's who we are. And so you just really have to sit with some of these questions, I think, in terms of what am I putting out there? And I think it's a good thing to sit with right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay, so I want to shift into talking about the past lives and just what Kirdwin is going to agree to do with us today, which she thrilled. Okay. My favorite past life regression with you was called a power life regression. That's what you called it. I'm going to past life regress you into your power life. And it was... We've been talking about, we last see each other, and I was trying to place when that was. It was like over a decade ago, but I remember it was around Halloween, and we were in a bookstore in Marin, and you did it as a group. And it was just, you're so good at what you do, not to put pressure on you, but it was just like, wow, it was like I don't know, 15 minutes or something, but I dropped right in. I was able to do that. So power life regression is something I thought would be fun to explore, because who doesn't want to connect with what you're really good at, where you are in your strength, rather than go back to those places, you know, which it's appropriate at other times to go back to those wounding places where you still need to pull the loop through, pull a thread through. So when you have people come to you, before we go into this power life, when you have people come to you, do you find they come for a past life? If you're still doing that, right? Are you still doing past life regression with people?
I'm not doing a lot. During COVID, I wasn't doing one-on-one sessions anymore. So I'm not doing a lot. I'm semi-retired now. I do a little bit. Mostly I do readings over the phone, which I really got into in a bigger way again during COVID. But the good thing is I have people from all over the world who can call me and get readings, right? That doesn't matter if we're in the same time zone or whatever.
So I find that it's like, maybe it's not as, like, it was really trendy and really a big thing for a while. You know, Brian Weiss and all these people were doing past life regressions. And so do you think that, you know, is it maybe not as necessary anymore because I'm not hearing as much about it anymore? Or, you know, because it tends to, like, my friend suggested this to me in a moment when I couldn't figure out what the problem was, right? Like, you explore different avenues and you're like, what is this? Why does this keep happening? And I can't figure out any conscious reason for this. Do you find there are multiple ways you can get to that place that needs healing?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, hypnosis is just a very good and direct, it's a direct line, you know, you can get through stuff much, much quicker than you can with talk therapy. And I'm not against talk therapy, I've had a ton of it, but you know, I'm just saying there's things that you can get through. And usually when people come to me, it's more trauma related. It's like a block, you know, there's a block, there's an obstacle. And so they're trying to figure out, well, let's figure out the obstacle and remove it. But basically, I think hypnosis is good, kind of, you can look at it from two different angles. One is, maybe there's a trauma from the past that needs to be resolved. And that could be either in your childhood or it could be in another life. By seeing where the trauma started and releasing some emotion held around it, usually people can let it go and move on mm-hmm. in a way that maybe they can't if they don't do that. Mm-hmm. But there's another, and now that we're for that, you need someone right there working with you mm-hmm. so it's safe. Yeah. But for what we're about to do right now, where you go back and check out a lifetime in which you had power. And by power, I don't mean power over other people. I mean power from within. Yeah. The true power, the internal power, the power to be who you really are, the power to add value to your community, to where you are. That's real power. And so by checking in with that, we can often then free up some power that we may have lost in the past in some way or mislaid. And you bring it forward so that it helps you in your current day. There's the kind of the two different directions. Okay, work on the trauma, which is difficult, but very powerful, but not something I would ever do unless I was one-on-one and knew I could get the person through it. And then there's what we're going to do, which is just an inspirational, hey, what if you had this past life? And what if in this past life you had this incredible talent? And what if you could bring that talent forward? And wouldn't that be great? So that's kind of what we're playing with right now is, can we do that? And before we start, I'd like to suggest a couple things. One, I'd like, if you're going to go on this journey with us, please get something to hold in your hand. And it could be a ring or a crystal or just something that feels, put it in your left hand, something that feels like a nice link, a powerful good link of some sort.
And find one. Keep going.
You're going to have to find one. And so find that, put it in your left hand. What you're going to use this for, if you need it, if anything does happen in this regression that's uncomfortable for you, and you want to come back before I bring people back, just squeeze this object three times. One, two, three. And it will bring you all the way back, you know, because just in case something comes up you don't want to deal with, this will just get you out of the situation and poof, you'll be back. Nice. So that's why I'm suggesting you do that. I don't think that's going to occur for anybody. It's just a fail-safe, like a fallback kind of a situation. Because I'm taking you, as I say, to somewhere that's powerful for you. We're not going to go deal with your big trauma because mm-hmm. we can't do that in this format. Mm-hmm. You can find someone to do that with, and I recommend you do, but this isn't that moment. This is a moment to go play. The other thing that may come up for you is what I often have people say is, oh, well, of course I'd go back to such and such a century. I'm just fascinated with that time period. I'm always reading about it. And I'm like, well, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Why do you think you're so fascinated with that time period? How did that start? And this is usually how it started, is that you were there. Mm-hmm. So again, you don't have to, you know, and you don't have to attach to, is it real? Is it not real? What's, you know, story? Well, of all the stories in the world, why did you pick this one? Hmm. Let's assume that it's going to have some psychological validity regardless. So just put aside the whole, I don't know if it's real or not, or you know, let go of the drama. There doesn't have to be any drama about this. Let's have fun. Let's play. So
I'm ready to play.
Let me know when you're ready.
Yeah. And also I would add to make sure you're in a stationary. You'd be surprised how many people.
Oh yeah. If you're in the car, just don't pull over. You're probably going back to somewhere where they don't have cars. So don't do that.
Be still and be safe. And, you know, I find that being relaxed is the best possible place to be for stuff like this, and just approaching it like an experiment. And if it doesn't work the first time, come back to it later. This is going to be recording. You can always just keep playing with the timing of it. Sometimes there's a timing thing.
Well, that's wonderful. That's true. People can come back and do it another time. Yeah. And that's the other thing. Just because you don't go on a journey, your first exposure doesn't mean you can't, or you're not built that way. Yeah, it's just, you didn't feel totally safe at that moment. It wasn't the right time. Whatever. Again, don't make a big drama.
Yeah.
Just be relaxed. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
And it doesn't mean it won't work next time. So.
Exactly.
So whenever you're ready to lead us, guide us, Braglin, I am open to it. I don't know if it's anything that's going to come through for me, listeners, viewers. I'm just open to whatever. Obviously, I trust Caradwyn, and I have to say, Caradwyn, I don't trust many people when you were talking about your psychic. I call that a spiritual boundary violation, and I have that special unique term for people who are in the spiritual world and find it okay to take their energy into your space.
What I was just referring to, you mean the story I just told
earlier? I'm sorry. It's like, right. I wanted to explain that I trust you, so your integrity so much. Otherwise, I wouldn't have even thought about doing this with you. Thank you.
All right. So just, you know, close your eyes if you are in the safe space to do that. And take a couple of deep breaths. And imagine yourself climbing on top of a big, beautiful, fluffy red cloud. And this red cloud is very, very comfortable. It's nice and warm. It is kind of nestling into your back as you lay back on it. And now the cloud is moving. It's going back and back and down, out of time and into time. This cloud is carrying you back to another lifetime, a lifetime where you had great power. Not power over others, but power within, the power to be yourself, the power to share your gifts. And you're going back and back and down. And now your cloud is turning a beautiful orange color. And it's a beautiful shimmery orange. You can smell oranges and orange blossoms. You could even taste oranges. All your senses are waking up in this other world. You're going back and back and down, floating and drifting on a beautiful yellow cloud. Yellow cloud is the color of sunlight. And you can feel your current form sort of swirling away as you remember, as you go back to another form, another place, another time. The time where you had your power, where you had your true sense of self, where you knew you were of value and everyone around you knew you were of value. And you're going back and back and down, floating and drifting on a beautiful sky blue cloud. And the sky blue cloud is taking you deeper and deeper into a green place. And it's a very green, beautiful cloud full of jungly kinds of feelings. You're going deeper and deeper, feeling your heart open, feeling that your power in this other lifetime was all about your heart. It was about really knowing, love and being able to exchange love. You're going down and down and back on the beautiful sky blue cloud. And you have your great clarity as you are entering into this other life. It is very familiar to you. You know exactly what was happening there. You know who you were. You know what your destiny was. And these memories are going to be very useful for you. And you're going back and back and down, floating and drifting on a beautiful indigo cloud. Indigo cloud is that dark, dark midnight blue. You feel yourself going through the starless place, the place betwixt and between one life and another. And you're going back into a life where you had power, you had presence. You had a sense of being exactly who you were supposed to be and doing exactly what you were supposed to do. You're floating and drifting and going back and back. The violet cloud is opening your crown chakra. You have access to all your past life memories, but this particular one is a life of great power, a life of great presence, a life of great love, a life where you understood that love is power and power is love. And now that violet cloud is taking you back into this lifetime. It will seem very familiar to you. A time where you felt very comfortable in yourself and in your world. And then you feel yourself entering the body of the person you were now. You can sort of feel your feet touching the ground inside the body of the person you are in this lifetime, this particular time that you've journeyed back to. The violet cloud is swirling away. And from your inner eyes, you're open and you can look around and see, where are you? What are you experiencing? Who is around you? Are there people around or are you alone? Are you outdoors or inside? What's the temperature? What are you wearing? What can you hear? Just opening your senses, seeing whatever the strongest senses are and following where your senses are taking you. You have come back to a particular point in this lifetime, a point in this lifetime where you felt a great deal of power, where you were doing exactly what you were born to do. And so just re-experience now, what is it that you are doing? Or how is it that you are being in this lifetime that connects you with your deepest self? Take a few moments to experience what is going on. Experience what it is like to be doing what you are so good at, to be feeling like you are where you belong. Feel that reference point in your body, in your mind, how it feels. To be doing right livelihood. To be adding value and love. If you wish, you can continue deeper into what is happening in this time frame. Or you can move to an earlier time in this life, perhaps when you were really learning your craft or finding out who you were destined to be. What was it like as a young person learning who you were What was it like being received by others who recognized your talents and your abilities and your value? Just experience that now. Or continue on with the scene that you were seeing originally. Feeling, experiencing. What do you hear? What do you see? What do you smell? And are you touching anything? Feel the reality of it, of this lifetime. If you wish now, you can go to a time a little further along, maybe one where there was a challenge and you met that challenge. Maybe there was a difficult situation, a challenging situation, or maybe just an exciting situation. And you had the resources to meet that challenge. Feel how satisfying that feels. Have the strength and the knowing and the depth to meet that challenge. Seeing, hearing, feeling everything about this. Staying grounded in your power. Slowly coming to completion with this experience. What else do you need to know about this lifetime, about your abilities? What is it about this lifetime that wants to be brought forward now? What is of value to you now? I'm coming to completion now. You can always come back to this life and explore it more. Again, feel who you were. What your special gifts were that you can bring forward. Everything lost is found again. Everything you knew then, you could know now. And feeling the love in your heart, the deep love that you carried with you in that life. Feel your heart grow larger, softer, warmer. Feel the joy that you experienced in that life. Remind your heart how beautiful and necessary joy is. Feel your strength, your ability to do whatever needed to be done. And now holding all these gifts within you. Give thanks to the person you were then. And bring that person along with you, whatever is wanting to come forward. Leave behind whatever you don't need, but whatever you want to come forward. Bring that with you now, almost like it was a bouquet of flowers. And once again, feel yourself laying on the beautiful violet cloud. And you are floating and drifting on the beautiful violet cloud. It is bringing you back and back, back from that lifetime where you were very powerful and knew how to add value. You're coming back and back, floating and drifting on a beautiful indigo cloud. Coming back and back and back, remembering everything very clearly and in great detail. Knowing that more details and memories are going to come through for you as you sit and think about this experience. You're coming back and back on a beautiful sky blue cloud. Feeling the great clarity that you have learned in this life. Bringing that back and back, your clarity, your memories. Back and back on a beautiful green cloud, and the cloud is the color of a beautiful green grassy field. You feel your heart expanding, expand it. Bringing back the love of that lifetime, coming back and back, floating and drifting, and your cloud is turning golden. This beautiful gold like sunlight. Coming back and back, feeling how strong and powerful your third chakra is, your power center is. How you know that power is power from within and power with. And you're bringing that power back and back, floating and drifting on a beautiful orange cloud. And feeling that power, filling your current body, filling your current psyche. The cloud is turning red. Beautiful ruby rose color. You can smell roses, and you're coming all the way back and back and back. Back into the lifetime where you started in 2025. You're coming all the way back, and you feel the red cloud dispersing, leaving you where you started. And at the count of three, you're going to be fully awake, aware, and present, remembering everything you've experienced. One, two, three. Open your eyes and be present and return. And if you want to start jotting down some notes about where you just were and what you just experienced, then by all means, it's a good way to remember.
That was so cool.
Oh, welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, I went to the same life that I went to before.
Oh, did you like that one? All right, well, good. Hey, that's a good touchstone for you.
And I liked my hair a lot in this lifetime that I was in.
Really? Well, you've got beautiful hair in this lifetime.
Yeah, but it was like golden, curly, like it was, yeah. Anyways, yeah, some new stuff and some stuff that I remembered that was really really cool. And it was very light and very easy and didn't feel like what I used to think hypnotherapy felt like. Now I'm a little more seasoned and I just feel like it's like just kind of a light, active imagination traveling.
Right. It's like dreaming awake, basically. Hypnosis is basically dreaming awake. And yeah, sometimes people have a very, very deep and intense experience. And sometimes it's more kind of light. And I sometimes have people say, well, I just don't know. Again, I don't know if that was a real lifetime or if I'm just making it up. And I'm like, well, again, of all the things you could have made up, this is what you made up. So let's assume there's some psychological validity here, because this is what showed up. And don't get too wrapped around the axle of, can I prove this really happened? Play with it. Maybe you can. As I say, I got pretty convinced when I was researching my books that I was actually having the experiences that I was having. But there's no harm in thinking that you made it all up either. It's still significant.
Yeah. So interesting.
So play with it either way.
Different ways to hold this. Wow. That was so special. I feel like I've been wanting to do that since whenever, 2011.
I don't know
when we last connected. So thank you.
Well, next time you should just have me come visit you on Honolulu, dear. Right. I do come to Hawaii pretty often.
Yeah. Do you come to the Big Island or do you come to Oahu? You probably have to fly through the Big Island, Oahu, Honolulu.
No, I usually go direct to Kona.
You are invited.
You could probably make me an offer I wouldn't refuse.
I'm hoping I could.
You could. So I'd like to meet more Hawaiian people. Oahu is the island I've explored the least, because the one and only time I really was, I was only there for a couple days and I was Waikiki and it was just so touristy. And I was like, I want to be out in the nature for the most part, right? Sure, I like going to elegant, wonderful restaurants and all that. Don't get me wrong. Love that. But overall, you know, when I'm going to Hawaii, I want to be in the water. I want to be in nature, hanging out with my dolphin friends. But yeah.
Me too. Well, when you come here, we have this little kind of almost like we live in an arboretum on very neighborhood-y here. We're close to other people and it's definitely urban, but we're like in this pocket of greenery. It's when people come into our yard, it's like we're kind of sunken below and it's like wildlife, banana trees, mango trees, everything. It's its own little ecosystem, even just right here. So it has its own little protective, sheltered things you like about Hawaii quality in this house. And then of course you are next to the big city here, but there's so much to explore in Oahu. There's probably a lot to like. So I will definitely have to have you. And I know people here would love to see you.
Well, that would be fun. No. I could come and do sessions with all your friends and we could have fun and I could meet all the magic people. Well, not all of them, but a few
all
of
the magic people.
All the on Oahu.
Mythical healer people that are here. But is there anything you would like to say to close your classes? What are you doing now? What would you like people to know about you?
Well, as I say, I'm kind of semi-retired. I'm doing a huge amount. I do psychic readings over the phone. So no matter where you are, you could always get a reading from me, at least while I'm still doing them, which I am now. I just had probably it was my last little apprenticeship.
Okay.
Closed a few months ago. And that was really sweet. That was just sweet, wonderful young women. I love hanging out with the young people. So that was fun. But, you know, I just don't have the energy of when I was younger. I'm 72, you know, I'm getting up there. So yeah. I'm somewhat forced to mostly being retired. I am, you know, working on a new book. Although I have a couple different ideas that I may segue over to a different, who knows? I've got a couple different things kind of on the burner. My last book that came out is a memoir called Rocket in My Pocket about growing up in the space industry in the 1960s. And so for people who are interested in kind of how did we get here from the 60s to where we are now? A little the way these books are written, you know, it's less of a commitment. My historical novels are long. They're in the 500 page range. They're big, fat books, you know. But these little memoirs are about 250 pages each, and they're a lot easier to
kind of,
you can just dip in and out. Mm-hmm. And this last one is funny. And we really, you know, it's a humor memoir. So we need as much funny as we can get, right?
Stories I read, they were really, really funny. You do have a wonderful sense of humor. You're an amazing storyteller. Obviously, you can do the epics, but you can also do these little slice of lives that are like almost like David Sedaris funny. So you're good.
Thank you.
More books.
Yes, I know someone said, well, you're like the female David Sedaris. And I was like, well, I prefer to think that David Sedaris is the male Carrad One falling star, but
why not?
It's all how you want to look at it.
Why not? It's all possible.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have your bio posted underneath this episode. So that'll have your contact info and ways for people to get a hold of you if you want to grab a reading with Kara Dwin. And I'm sure that we'll be connected in other ways now going forward that my people can hear about you again. Just wanted to say so wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Lovely to connect with you again. Yeah, you can buy my books online. So check out your wherever you buy books online, you can order them. Yeah. So
yeah.
You can also contact me through, if you contact me through Facebook, then we can message if you want to make an appointment or something like that.
Yeah. And, you know, Kara Dwin obviously is the real deal. So just want to reiterate that in case you didn't get that.
thank you very much. It's been a pleasure connecting with you again.
Likewise.
And,
okay. Take care.
Aloha.
Aloha. Mm-hmm.